Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Rundown, the podcast that talks about comic book story arcs. I'm your host, Joe, and with me today is my friend, Miles.
Hi, everyone.
So, Miles, what we like to do here on the Comic Book Rundown is, for the first-time guest, we like to have them tell the audience their comic book background. Would you mind giving us yours?
Absolutely. Actually, I don't remember when I first got into comics, quite honestly. I want to say that it was probably through one of the animated shows when I was a child.
There were many of them back then.
Batman, obviously, in 1988, came out the year that I was born. Mm-hmm. And it was a huge hit. Now, of course, obviously, we look back, Tim Burton took huge risk and creative liberty with Batman, but it made it popular, and I started getting the toys and started watching some of the shows and comics, and it was primarily, honestly, Spider-Man that made me fall in love with comics.
The cartoon one?
Yeah, he was funny, mm-hmm. He was acrobatic, he got his butt handed to him, but it never stopped him from getting back up again. You notice that, like, Peter Parker's life marked by tragedy and honestly getting his ass handed to him, but it hasn't stopped him from getting back up again. And since then, you combine that with my love for Star Wars and the fact that Star Wars there for a long time had its own comic line and expanded universe line as well. Yeah. They kind of went hand in hand. So I grew up loving Superman and Spider-Man and just the goodness that they stood for. And Batman had all the cool gadgets and stuff like that. You know, he was like a darker James Bond that has, to this day, continued. Now, I don't read comics today as often as I once did. You know, if there's a particular storyline that I'm interested in, I'll go pick it up. But I'm more likely to hop into something by Image Comics, where it's an independent, rather than try and plug back into the convoluted storylines of today. You know, like Spider-Man, One More Day, and Spider-Verse, and Spider-Island, and all that kind of stuff. I can't keep up.
I might have you sit in on some of those then, if you're available.
Yeah,
It's down the road.
Because I can't even wrap my... I can't catch up to it. You know what I mean? I prefer to jump into stuff like Robert Kirkman's Birthright. Which is great, honestly. Or Outcast, you know, and pick up from there where it's a limited series.
Yeah.
And it's easier for me. I like the miniseries. Robert Kirkman's Invincible is phenomenal.
Dude, it's beautiful. I'm getting chills just thinking about, because I, again, haven't read the last issue, but up until then,
novels are really kind of my bread and butter, honestly. I've loved the Alan Moore stuff, V for Vendetta, The Watchmen. Kingdom Come was phenomenal with Alex Ross's art. Fell in love with it. Marvels, again, with Alex Ross as the art. These were just great, because I pursued a English lit degree in college. And I'm a huge fan of creative writing on the side as well myself. So I appreciate good storytelling, and which is also probably why, and I'm sure later on in the episode it'll get brought up, man, I can't stand the camp. You know what I mean? Because it's just difficult at times. So.
Speaking of camp, why don't we just go ahead and get into it then?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. Today, we are going to be talking about Captain America issues 114 through 119, The Coming of the Falcon. These issues came out in 1969. They were written by Stan Lee with art by John Romita Sr., Sal Buscema, John Buscema, and Gene Colan. Nice little plethora of artists there.
Right, and actually, you know, it's interesting the way that you say that is because that's a good kind of place to start. Mm-hmm. I've noticed in just some of the style and some of these issues when you're starting in the credits.
Yes.
It started by, you know, like lettering and embellishment by our pal, you know what I mean, Herb Cooper, or embellished by Sal Buscema, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Here we go. Here's one right here, which it was Now Begins Nightmare, you know, issue 115, with legible, lovable lettering by Sam Rosen, you know, illustrated by Big John Buscema, just how willing they were to actually humanize the people behind the comics.
It's one of those things, I think they wanted to make it legitimate. Like, I think at that time, I want to say in the 60s, they kind of still looked at, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, you know, you fans, 60s and 70s, they looked at them as, you know, child's books.
Right.
So having them just play around with that, I think hurt, maybe not hurt, probably kind of led credence to it being the child's mentality, but the storylines themselves were pretty serious.
Yeah.
So.
Right. I mean, it's. I'm glad that we're kind of starting with this one too, because
it's a good story.
Honestly, Marvel. You know, Cap is Marvel's equivalent of Superman. I mean, he's one of the founding fathers, really, of the Trinity. You know what I mean? Because the DC Trinity was always you had Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, and then for Marvel, it was always Cap, Iron America, and Thor.
Yeah.
You know.
But yeah. So let's go ahead and get into the books. So we start out,
absolutely.
And we see Cap walking around saying, you know. Well, Steve Rogers is dead. I'm officially... Now nobody knows who Captain America is. And it's... he's walking around in the rain to the point where he has no idea what he's doing. And he actually ends up uncontrollably or unknowingly walking towards Avengers' headquarters.
And one thing that struck out to me was that the Avengers, you know, Black Panther noticeably goes, you know, with his detective skills, oh no, that's definitely Captain America.
Yeah. The way he walked.
Right. And then they just let him go. There's no, after everything that happened with the bolt holes in the mask and all this kind of stuff, this fiasco, they just let him go. Which was interesting to me.
They are waiting on him to come to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that's how Cap always was. But then you got Goliath, who's like, he makes mention that, I thought that was Cap, but he turned away, so it can't be him.
Right.
And everybody's just like, well, eh.
Okay, yeah.
We're
busy, you know, even though they're all just hanging out at the HQ. We're busy, yeah. But the thing that strikes me from a storytelling perspective, because I love the way that good storytelling is plotted out.
Yeah.
I don't know, is this a story device? Is this a plot device to simply allow the story that they're wanting to tell to unfold? Okay, let's not have the Avengers get involved. Or was that his natural rapport with the Avengers, and is it indicative of the fact that, you know what, there was just this overwhelming... level of trust for that I trust Steve Rogers and Captain America's intent to where if he's doing something, I don't need to question it.
Well, but they also make mention that they don't mention Steve at all by name. It's all Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are in the mindset that Steve Rogers is dead, that was a mask as well. So we get Cap, and this is perfect what you were talking about, how he still is being himself. He dresses up as Cap because, you know, he's Captain America.
Right.
Goes to see Fury.
In the barbershop.
Now, I
love, you know, there's no JLA Watchtower teleporter or anything like that. There's no Avengers Tower yet.
Like, it's just a base underneath a barbershop.
He had to activate the window fogger to get down there so nobody could look in for 30 seconds.
So he hops down. He's going to see Nick Fury. Which, like I think I said this previously, Nick Fury looks like David Hasselhoff.
Yeah, this is the Hasselhoff version of it. And this is pre MCU and Ultimates version Samuel Jackson Nick Fury.
Yes, but he's wanting to go see, wanting to hear Sharon Carter's Peggy voice.
Carter's daughter. But in this time,
great sister.
Niece. Is that
crap? I can't remember. In the movie, it was niece,
great niece, or something like that.
This one, I can't remember what they said. I think originally it was sister, but then they changed it at some point to being either daughter or some relative.
Yeah, she's still never actually 13 here. Obviously.
Yeah, they never actually say what she is here, and I did look it up, and I can't remember what it was. I didn't put that in my notes, and that's my fault. But yeah, you're correct. She's Agent 13. He's wanting to hear her voice because as of right now, she is distraught because she doesn't know that Cap's alive.
Right.
She thinks Cap's dead like everybody else. So she's on this mission that Fury sent her on to spy on AIM, just to see what they're doing. AIM,
good old advanced idea mechanics.
There you go. And they are in the middle of... Really, they don't really say it. She's just spying on them. So Carter, or Sharon, is getting ready to attack because she's like, well, these guys are doing... she's supposed to just be reporting what they're doing, but she's like, well... Now that Steve is dead, what does my life matter? You know, I don't... I'm going to do whatever I want. And Fuhrer's like, no, you're not. You're disregarding orders. But she isn't listening, so she blasts into this building where these guys are just hanging around. One thing I love, though, is so this one guy takes one of his guns, shoots the gun out of her hand. She uses her mini flamethrower in her glove, shoots the gun out of his hands, and two panels later, you see that gun on fire. Like, what the heck is that gun made out of?
Yeah,
to be something that burns. Fire.
Yeah, you know, they didn't think about it. There was just a case of like, hey, you know what? She hit it with the fire. I can't forget that it was on fire.
Yeah.
In the same thing, though, you notice, again, ahead of his time, here we are. We live in an era where women empowerment is such a big thing.
It's starting to be.
And she's, I quote, you know, of course, you mustn't let my sex inhibit you, you know, when they're trying to say, because, forget she's a woman, punch her anyway. She goes, hey, I may be a female, but that doesn't mean I'm helpless. And exactly. Here she is taking on...
Four guys.
Yeah,
she,
you know,
she
in the 60s.
Took out four guys.
Yeah.
But as she is fighting them, one of the guys, one of the goons, calls for what he calls the walking stiletto. And it's this giant robot about, I would say, 9 feet tall, give or take. And it's got, like, pointy spikes for her hands.
Right.
And as she's getting ready to attack it, we see Captain America's shield come in, bashing it back. And Sharon is just... ecstatic about that.
There's this great scene where it's like a close-up on her face and she's got these tears in her eyes and she says, it can't be, but it is. It is.
Cap, you're alive.
That's right. Yeah.
And then Cap... And so in the previous episode, we had a little count of Dick Grayson, Robin, being a dick. Cap is very dickish to Sharon at this moment, to the point of like, hey, you know, you need to listen to me. Because I know what's right. He does it, not only does it do it to Sharon, but he does it to Rick as well, Rick Jones. Like here's an example. Sharon, stay back. He's too strong. He moves too fast. And Rick's like, well, I'll get him, Cap. And then Cap says, no, Rick, there's nothing you can do. It's like, you want this guy to help, you want this kid to help you, but then you're not giving him the chance to do anything because you're afraid that it's going to turn into another Bucky. So why did you let him wear Bucky's suit? If you're going to be worried about him constantly.
Well, and that's something that they call into question later here in the game. But that this whole panel, this series here, where they're having this fight against the walking stiletto, Cap really does take the lead. And one thing that struck out to me was that, you know, he's leading.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Not just, like, he's like a battlefield commander. Like, hey, follow my orders. Do it this way. And this right here was him actually kind of being like the head of his perpetual household here.
Yeah.
And doing his job. You know what I mean? Because... while it might have been, to your point, a case of, like, well, why do you even have Rick Jones in the Bucky suit if you're not going to let him help? By the same token, if you recognize, hey, he's only going to get himself in there and get killed if I don't say something.
Well, but he even he's trained with him. He's had him train a little bit here and there. But in the issues prior to this, even with his training, he wasn't trusting Rick enough to hold his own. He's like, you need to get out of here. I can't handle these guys. I don't want you to even attempt it.
Right.
You know, and... he even says here with Sharon when she hops in to try and take, you know, use her gun. This, what does she call it? This is our most lethal weapon, our most lethal handgun, and the shots aren't doing anything to this guy. And he makes comment of like, you little fool, courage alone can't stop an AIM creation. It's which, I mean, he's right, but at the same time, to your point, like these guys are trying, they're living up to Cap's example and following his lead. But they're still doing their own thing, which could hurt them. And he's more worried about them than he is himself, which is a good leader.
Right.
But it just... It's
interesting team dynamics that you don't...
Yes.
That you see...
That's what I was looking for.
So.
Yeah, and it's... Again, like, they do listen to Cap, but he is... I feel like he's not abusing the privilege of being the leader, but...
Domineering.
Yes, and he takes that to a point that, you know, is just, can be overbearing, can be...
Do you think they do it because it's a captain issue, you know, and so they have to have captain, of course, be the most heroic front and center, and that was, like, the most important thing?
Back then, I would say probably, honestly. But so after a few more pages of fighting, Cap finally is able to bring him down. He basically aims for the weak spot in the armor, which is just around the neck point, around the joints, takes him down, Fury... comes in to basically clean up the mess, and Sharon is ecstatic that Cap is alive.
Right. Yeah, that's the only thing that really matters to her at this point. Never mind, I took out a cell of leaders.
Nope, exactly.
My love is alive, you know?
Yep.
Which, I mean, hell, if I was in the reverse shoes and something like that happened to my wife, I'd be feeling the same thing, you know?
Same thing with Emily. Like,
yeah.
I'd be ecstatic.
Yeah.
But that's short-lived because Cap wants her to resign from S.H.I.E.L.D., mainly because he doesn't want to worry about her. He feels like she... shouldn't have to face the dangers that he faces.
Yeah. Never mind that he is, right? Little hypocritical there at that point.
Exactly.
Of course, different tool sets, right? He's a little bit better equipped.
He's got the super soldier serum pumping through his veins. She's just a highly trained agent.
Right. So I think that what's interesting here is that allows for a lot of discussion between the fact that you've got somebody who, hey, the reality is I am better equipped. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so he asked her, I guess it's understandable for him to not to want her in danger.
Yeah.
But this is something, and I highlighted it like four times here in my notes, was the fact that Cap asks Sharon to resign, mm-hmm. and her response is, Cap, that would make me essentially extremely unhappy. Don't ask me to do it.
Yeah.
What does that point out to? It points out to the fact that if he had pushed the issue, she would have honored him. What does he do instead? He backs off.
He walks away.
He honors what she wants and says, okay, I won't ask it of you. And then he gets a little petulant and says, I won't ask it of you ever again. So, you know, there's a tiff. They have an argument, which happens amongst any couple. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm still happy to see him respect her wishes.
Okay.
However much it doesn't make him happy.
Okay. I like that. I like that the aspect of it. Okay. So then we see Cap putting on a disguise. Because he's, you know, Steve Rogers, like I said, is dead to the world. Gonna keep reiterating that. So he's trying to hide himself. He gets a wig, he changes his facial structure a little bit, and he's trying to find a hotel to stay at, you know, for the night. And everybody's like, well, like, I like this one. No driver's license, no credit cards, and you're not even sure your name? Try some other place, mister.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, he can't even think of, he even says here that he's so distraught, he can't think of the answers to give these guys, and all he has to do is lie.
Right.
But it's Captain America, he can't do that. But he does find like a seedy hotel, and for $10 for the whole week. I mean, if
sign of the times.
If I could find a hotel for $10 for the whole week, whew. But so he gets into his room and he's, you know, kind of sulking, and all of a sudden, what is it here? Silent shock, like some strange shifting of time and space itself.
Because, you know, he's so familiar with what the shifting of time and space itself looks like that he can describe it to the readers.
Is it possible that there's been some things prior to it? I don't know.
When you can see in the background this onomatopoeia they use.
Yeah,
You know, where it's great, you know. So,
But what ends up happening is that the Red Skull is standing in front of him.
A form materializing in the dark. Yeah. No!
It is, and he says that, you know, he finally got his all-powerful cosmic cube back. And, I mean, it looks a lot like the Tesseract from Avengers.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is that the Tesseract was the cosmic cube. You know what I mean? It was based off of. And, you know, that's where that episode ends, is on a perfect cliffhanger. You know, you guys.
Thank you for listening to the Comic Rundown. If you'd like to get a hold of us, you can do so on Twitter at Comic Rundown, on Instagram at Comic Book Rundown, or you can send your emails to comicbookrundown@gmail.com. We'll be back very soon with the next chapter of this Captain America story arc.